Good morning. I hope you're all well today, well rested after an extra hour of sleep, maybe, last night. Seems like it should be later in the day somehow. I hope you have been enjoying and profiting from our study from the book of Proverbs, those of you who have been in the auditorium class recently. The first few chapters of Proverbs especially, I think, are very important to us and very, very interesting and very helpful. It used to puzzle me the verses in Proverbs that say, especially there in those first few chapters, that say to pursue wisdom. Just so adamant about pursue wisdom. And I thought, who gets up in the morning and says, today I'm going to pursue foolishness? Do people do that? It puzzled me that you would have to admonish us to pursue wisdom. I don't know anybody who says, I'm going to pursue folly and foolishness. And so it seemed to me that we have this, you know, it's a two-sided coin. You have wisdom on one side and you have folly on the other side. So the alternative choice then to pursuing wisdom is to pursue foolishness, I thought. But you know, that's not really the alternative choice to pursuing wisdom. We pursue all kinds of things. We make choices for all kinds of reasons. We make choices in our lives because of what will bring us the most material prosperity. What's going to be financially the best choice for us? Or we'll choose what will bring us maybe the greatest pleasure or maybe the greatest power. Some people seem to be motivated by acquiring power. And we'll choose this and we'll choose that and we'll choose the course of our lives for all kinds of reasons. But how often do we make our choices not because it will be financially best or because it will be the most pleasurable or it will bring us the best job, but we make the choice because it is wise? I think the alternative to wisdom is not just foolishness, but the alternative choice to wisdom is choosing things for all kinds of reasons other than wisdom. And so as I've reflected on this, it seems much more clear to me now why the Proverbs spend so much time saying, pursue wisdom, choose wisdom, look for wisdom, be wise. Because so much of the time we make choices in our lives not for reasons of wisdom, but for all kinds of other reasons. I think it is a great irony in the scripture that if we want to look to an example of a man who has made choices for reasons other than wisdom, one place to go is to Solomon's own son. Of all people who had an opportunity to sit at the feet of wisdom, it would have been Solomon's children. Now, if you look at Solomon's life, you know that although God blessed him with wisdom, his wisdom was proclaimed far and wide. People would come from distant lands. We know the Queen of Sheba that came from a distant land just to see Solomon and meet him and get to talk with him because he was so wise. But that doesn't mean Solomon himself always made wise choices in his life. And you see that Solomon made some choices that led him away from God. Solomon made some very unwise choices in his life. But I don't know how Solomon raised his children. In the Proverbs, He tells us some wise things about raising children, and he has some admonitions for children, and he has some admonitions for fathers and how to raise their children. But he raised the son who was foolish in what he did. And Dan has just read for us this passage from 1 Kings, starting in chapter 11, about the well-known incident of Solomon's son Rehoboam, who became king after Solomon died. And Rehoboam made some foolish choices. The people of Israel wanted a king. They thought they didn't have a king, I suppose. The people of Israel had a king, and the king was the Lord, Jehovah. But they wanted a king not like that, but like the nations around them. And if you look at 1 Samuel chapter 8, 1 Samuel chapter 8, the prophet Samuel is speaking to the people. God has told Samuel, they want a king, we'll appoint them a king. And 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 10, so Samuel spoke all the words of the Lord to the people who had asked of him a king. And he said, this will be the procedure of the king who will reign over you. He's saying, you want a king? Okay, here's what you're going to get when you get a king. He will take your sons and place them for himself in his chariots and among his horsemen, and they will run before his chariots, and he will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and of fifties and of some to do his plowing and to reap his harvest and to make his weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will also take your daughters for performers and cooks and baker, excuse me, for perfumers and cooks and bakers, and he will take the best of your fields and your vineyards and your olive groves and give them to his servants, and he will take a tenth of your seed and of your vineyards and give to his officers and to his servants. He will also take your male servants and your female servants and your best young men and your donkeys and use them for his work. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his servants. Then you will cry out in that day because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves, but the Lord will not answer you in that day. They wanted a king. They'll get a king. This is the kind of king they're going to get, the Lord told them. And it happened, of course, exactly the way the Lord said it would happen. And Solomon was a king of great wisdom, and he came to be a king and a man of great wealth and prosperity. And we read about Solomon, and we read about his wealth and prosperity. And what we don't see when we read that is we don't see how that wealth came to Solomon and how that prosperity came to Solomon. And we don't see the burden that was placed on the people, that all of the taxes and the it being impressed into service to the king, and all of that was taking place during the time of the kings, and that was taking place during the time of Solomon as well. And so when Rehoboam became king, the people wanted some relief. They wanted relief because it happened exactly the way God said it would happen, and they said exactly what God said they would say. And so they wanted some relief from the heavy burden that Solomon had placed on them. And so we see then in this incident in 1 Kings chapter 12, mostly in chapter 12, of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, coming as a leader, sort of a popular leader of the people, coming to Rehoboam and saying, look, we need some relief. Your father made it hard for us. We're asking you to make things a little bit easier. So Rehoboam then went off to ponder his response to them. He went to the older, wiser men, the elders, the men who had advised his father. Can you imagine being an advisor to one of the wisest men who's ever lived? Do you think maybe these men were men of wisdom, the older men that Rehoboam went to first? Who would be qualified to be an advisor to Solomon? So Rehoboam went to those who are qualified to be advisors to Solomon, and he asked for their advice. And they gave him some advice, and he promptly turned around and went to the others who had grown up with him, the younger men. I don't know if you ever thought about this, how young would those younger men have been in the time of Rehoboam, those who had been raised up with him? The book of, what is it, Second Chronicles. The book of Second Chronicles tells us that when Rehoboam became king, Rehoboam was 41 years old. I don't know if you think of 41 as being a young man or not. There's a time when I thought 41 was really old. Now I think maybe 41 is pretty young. But in the affairs of men, a man who's 41 years old is a man who is well into his adult years, has probably already married and raised children, and perhaps at 41 has even raised children up to adulthood. But those who had risen up with Rehoboam were the younger men. And he went to the younger men and he asked them for advice. The Lord has told us in the New Testament, in describing the church that he wants, the church that we need, he has given us instruction by example to appoint elders in churches. Think about that term, elder. The term is used, or the office is described using different terms in the New Testament. We've got the term pastor, presbyter, bishop, shepherd. In my experience, in my lifetime, it seems that Christians in the churches I know usually use the term by custom, will usually use the term elder instead of these other terms. Although I've noticed in just the last few years, I think I hear more people, Christians in churches, referring to their elders as shepherds, which is a good biblical term as well for that office. Describes a little bit about the job that they do as leaders within the church. But in my experience, we've often even dominantly used the term elder to refer to this office. Every once in a while, a couple of teenage boys wearing white shirts and name tags will knock on my door, and they will introduce themselves as, "I'm Elder so-and-so from one of the prominent religious groups of our day." You probably know who I'm talking about. It doesn't really matter. But an 18-year-old boy describing himself as an elder somehow to me just doesn't seem right. If you look at the New Testament, at 1 Timothy and Titus, and you see how the Lord describes those who we would look to choose to serve as elders among us, you see that the word elder is a very apt description. The elders of the church are men who are not novices in the faith. They've got experience, and experience comes with age. Experience, you know, you don't get experience without having the experience, and that comes with age. And so the bishops, the presbyters, the pastors, the shepherds are to be men who have experience. They are to be men who have raised children, men who have been proven in raising children, children who we can see in their children that they have been taught well through the ages as they are raised up to adulthood. Exactly how old should elders be? We might ask that question, and the Lord doesn't give us a number on that. But he describes men that are not going to be young men in meeting the qualifications. And so he gives us some room for judgment, for our own judgment in making a choice about who we appoint to that office of elder. But if we are appointing really young men who are novices, who have no experience in the faith, in the gospel, in the fathering and raising of children, and the other things that he talks about in the qualifications for elders, then we have made a big mistake in making our choice for those who would lead us as shepherds. Rehoboam seemed to not appreciate what it meant to be an elder of Israel, because he went for his advice, he listened to their advice, and he immediately discounted it. And he went for his advice somewhere else in trying to decide what to do in response to Jeroboam's request and the request of the people. They wanted relief from Solomon's oppression. And Rehoboam responded as the young men advised him, with very foolish advice. He responded by saying, "You think it's been bad under my father? You haven't seen anything yet." And so he responded with the claim that he was going to make things harder on them, he was going to require more of them, and he was going to, he says, chastise them not with whips but with scorpions. I'm not sure what it would mean to chastise with scorpions, but it sounds really bad to me. Rehoboam seemed not to understand the basic principle that I think has been true throughout history in the affairs of men and nations, and it continues to be true today, and that is revolt is always an option among the people that are ruled. Revolt is always an option. I'm not saying it's necessarily the best option or necessarily the godliest option, but revolt is always an option. And he seemed to have the notion that the people were there to serve him and not him to serve the people. And that's the way it was, and that's the way it was going to be. And he could insist on that, and they would just fall into place, and they would fulfill that role. The older men recognized, I think, that revolt and rebellion is an option, and that by the king serving the people would be satisfied, and the people would continue in faithful service to Rehoboam. Rehoboam seemed to think what leaders throughout history have thought, and that is, if I can seize power, that's what I want. I remember one of our presidents in one of the past administrations, when he was running for the office of president, there was a lot made of the fact that he was not a man of great wealth. A lot of people who run for the office have risen through the ranks of of politics and have done what politicians do and have used their political power and authority to amass wealth for themselves. Our current president was already a man of great wealth before he even entered politics. But this one past president I'm thinking of was not a man of great wealth, and a lot was made of that in his campaign. And I heard someone who had known him in the state and local politics that he began in said, well, how is it that he's been in politics all this long and he doesn't have much money? And the response was, well, if you knew him personally, you would know that his thing is not money. His thing is power. It's power and control. And if you look at people throughout history, throughout all time in history, there have always been people who had a lust for power and control over others. When I say all times in history, I'm including our time as well. It's like everything is political now. Politics has invaded everything in our lives, and we talk about Washington. So much of our news is about what's going on in Washington, about what's going on in government, and it's at the state level as well, but it seems like the national level dominates the news so much. And when I look at the people involved in our government, I try not to make a sermon, a political speech. I think there are plenty of churches, if you want that, there are plenty of churches across the country and across our city and across the world that have taken the faith and turned it into something political, and I think they're mistaken in doing that. I'm not here to make a political speech today, but I do think I see in our politics a lot of people that have a lust for power and control over others. And I see that, I think, at all levels of government and at all levels of politics. I wonder, why are they doing this or that? And it's because it's all because of power. You look at people like we could name, you know, there have been lots of dictators, even in the 20th and into the 20th century and into the 21st century especially. And I'm thinking of people like Adolf Hitler and people like Mao Zedong in China, and currently Kim Jong-un in North Korea. And you think, here are some choices that they could make, and they could do this or that, and it would look what great prosperity they could bring to their people. You look to North Korea and you see the people of North Korea live in abject poverty, sometimes even starving to death. And you look at the people of North Korea, you look at photographs of them, and you see they are very small, very thin people. Have you noticed that? They don't have enough food. And you look at their leader and he's the fat one, right? I don't mean any disrespect. Maybe I do mean a little disrespect to him. But he's the round, chubby one. He has plenty. His people do not. And you think, look, if he would just do this or that, you know, name your favorite policy that you think he should adopt. If he would just do this, he could bring prosperity to his people so they're not starving to death. And you think, doesn't he understand that? And the answer is probably, yes, he does understand that. But you know he doesn't care, because he's got power, and he's got that power over other people. And that's what he wants. Like I said, I don't want to be political here, but I think I see this in Rehoboam. I think I see a man who is more concerned about power for himself than he was about what was good for his people. He had a lust for power. You want to know what a king should be? What God would want a king to be? All you have to do is look to our King, our Lord and Savior Jesus, and you see what a king should be. And I think the greatest picture of what God would want the king to be is seen in that scene at the Last Supper, where Jesus takes off his robe and puts a towel around his waist and gets down on the floor with a bowl of water to wash the feet of his apostles. There's what a king should be. There's what Rehoboam should have been for his people. And that's what kings should be in our day. And occasionally, we will see a great political leader who seems to have that spirit about them. I think it's fairly rare, but we see people that are all about acquiring power for themselves. And then when you see one who seems to be unconcerned about that, it seems so remarkable. You know, one of the most remarkable things about George Washington, I think, that made him the great man that I believe he was the fact that when the war was over, he told his soldiers goodbye, he resigned his commission, and he went home. And the kings and prime ministers and potentates of Europe saw this happening in America, and they just couldn't believe it. Because what they expected was he led this great army, what came to be a great army, that defeated a great opponent. And, of course, he would declare himself to be king, and he would use that army to rule with an iron fist over the people of America. And that's not at all what George Washington did. He went home. He said, "I'm done." And then they called him back to be president. And he said, "Okay, I'll do that." And he served a couple of terms. And then he said, "That's enough. I'm going home again." And so he did. And so we had that tradition. It started as a tradition, now encoded in the Constitution, that a president will only serve two terms. It came from George Washington's lack of interest in power and authority for himself over people. I mention him because that is so very unusual in the affairs of men. What's usual is what Rehoboam was, and that is you get a little power, you want a little bit more. And power corrupts, as we know the saying, power corrupts, and power, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And Rehoboam was corrupted by that desire for power. And so, revolt is always an option. And that's exactly what happened. And that's what God had said would happen. And that's what happened. And so, we find Rehoboam has been, although the son of one of the wisest men in the world, he was a man of foolishness. I don't know, you know, we don't know a lot about the details of Rehoboam's life. Was foolishness characteristic of his entire life? All of the choices that he was making all of the time, I don't know about that. But I know about this incident, and I know how he made some very foolish choices. He chose not to follow the wisdom of the older, wiser, more experienced men who came before him, but he followed the foolishness of the young men that had grown up with him. And he did not follow God's plan for those who would rule over men and nations, the plan of being like Jesus, washing feet, being a servant. Rehoboam took the tack that they're going to serve me, I'm not going to serve them. And so we find a man of foolishness then. He was foolish in another regard. He was foolish that he just did not respect what God had tried to tell his father and his father's father and the people through the voice of the prophets, that they needed to recognize that you don't need men as your lawmakers and your leaders. You need God, and you need God's law, and you need God as your king. We need Jesus of Nazareth as our king. We need to look to him and follow him. I am not in a position of authority like Rehoboam was. I see this from the other side. I see this from the side of one who is ruled by the rulers. I need to look to God as my ruler. We live in the world. Leaders in the governments of the world, and that's all fine. That's all well and good. In fact, that is part of God's plan, that we have those who are leaders. He expects us to respect them, even if they are not respectable. He expects us to respect them. We should not be looking toward revolt as our primary option in dealing with political issues, I don't believe, if we're to serve God. But we need to serve God more than we need to serve men. And we as those who are ruled need to recognize that, and those who do the ruling also need to recognize that. So that's the lesson from the life of Rehoboam. He had every opportunity to be a man of wisdom. I don't think Rehoboam got up one morning and said, "What shall I do today? Today I think I will be a fool." But he made choices that were, in fact, not pursuing wisdom. He didn't make his choices because they were wise. He made his choices because they brought him power. And he thought they would bring him material wealth, I suppose. And he was foolish in making those choices. He was not wise. So let me encourage you to pursue wisdom. Don't pursue the foolish path that Rehoboam chose. We do not currently have elders in the church here. I hope that we will be busy and active in pursuing the appointment of elders. Elders who are qualified according to the qualifications that God gives us, and then who will serve well in that office. You can find people who have a lust for power in places other than Washington. And I have seen people who lusted for power in all aspects of my life. On the job, in the organization I work for, maybe in the neighborhood, maybe in the family, and certainly I've seen it in the church. We think about appointing elders. Let's think about appointing good men who are well qualified, who recognize that they have a responsibility to be servants of God and servants of the church. And if we can find men like that who are qualified and we can point to be elders, we will not be a flock wandering in the wilderness without shepherds, but we will be a flock with good shepherds who will lead us in the way that we should go. And then if we are able to appoint such men, then we need to respect them. And we need to respect them as the older men, those who are wiser, those who are experienced, and look to them, respect their leadership, respect their guidance. Listen to what they have to say. And if we will do that, we will avoid the problems that Rehoboam encountered and his people rebelling and ripping the kingdom away from him. I want to encourage you to be wise. The greatest wisdom you can exercise is to be a child of God, to devote your life to being one of his people, and let him be your king and let him rule over you. Honor him, follow his wisdom, pursue his wisdom in the choices that you make in your life. If you are not a Christian, I think you have not yet made the wisest of choices. Choose wisely. Choose Christ. Choose the gospel. If we can help you to become a Christian this morning, we would be glad to do that, to baptize you into Christ, to encourage you in the faith. If you need encouragement in the faith, if we can help you, if you'll come forward to the front, we will be glad to assist you as we stand and sing the invitation song number 613.